So everyone, welcome back to the Menopause Movement Podcast. Where this is a special California edition. We're coming from Irvine, California, from the Business by Design live conference, and my friend Kelly West is here with us. Now, Kelly has been a pediatric registered nurse for over 23 years, primarily caring for kids with cancer, and that's near and dear to my heart. If you followed me for any time, you know my son had cancer. She's a clinician and educator and mentor, now turned entrepreneur, helping caregivers banish burnout and overcome overwhelm. So thanks so much, Kelly, for being here on the podcast. I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Michelle, for having me. I'm really honored.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how you came to get into, let's first talk about like working with children, pediatric. I mean, this is a, this is a really difficult area. You know, as a mom of a child who had cancer, I was that parent that you ran away from. I was always afraid. I had so much anxiety about my son and his illness and whether he was going to live. And he was so sick. And I was just always asking questions, trying to understand. I wasn't in medicine yet. I didn't understand anything. Tell me how you ended up in, because the pediatric nurse, oncology nurses are like the best.
Thank you. Yeah. So my journey, I always knew I wanted to be a pediatric nurse. I didn't necessarily choose oncology. I think it chose me. I always say that. It just sort of, life happened, and I ended up getting an externship at the end of my final semester and was put on an oncology ward and fell in love. You know, just loved the kids, loved the nursing staff, just connected so much. And I was like, knew from that start that that's where I was meant to be.
Yeah. So 20, you said 23 years that you've been doing this?
Yeah, so it wasn't consecutive. I started my career as a new grad nurse on a pediatric oncology ward at a children's hospital in Arizona, and started that and did that for about 5 years initially. We moved to a different state, but before that, I had a little bit of like just general peds experience. We were in a smaller town. Went back to a children's hospital when we moved to Colorado and worked in pediatric oncology once again for 11-12 years. I'm still at that children's hospital, just in a different capacity, but still work with some families. I've had friends that have had kids as well be diagnosed. So kind of always still in that realm, because I think it is always a part of me.
Yeah. And so part of what you teach, if I understand it correctly, is you teach resilience. And I know from having conversations with you that you initially wanted to reach out to parents like me who are closer. You know, my son's 26 years old now, and he was diagnosed and treated at 21 months for 3 years. What did you pivot, or are you still reaching out to that community?
As a newer entrepreneur, you know, I'm always kind of figuring things out and pivoting. Initially, a few months ago, I was looking at starting to work with families, parents of kids that have had a child with cancer. And these parents were mostly 3, 5, 12 years even out of their child's diagnosis. Their kids were doing great, but they were really still struggling with kind of life and stressors and overwhelm with lots of, you know, ongoing things. But as I, you know, have been kind of working in that realm, what I also learned is that how much I love talking about resiliency and, you know, talking to others, that nurses are a big part of it. So it's really, you know, looking at that caregiver model where, you know, parents as caregivers and nurses, certainly myself as a nurse, being that caregiver that, you know, can get the same kind of, you know, burnout from just caring for and putting all your energy and, you know, life into caring for others that you love and adore. And it can be stressful, and it can be, you know, it can lead to a lot of burnout. We don't allow ourselves to rest, whether you're a parent dealing with a child with cancer or you're a nurse dealing with a child with cancer, you know, can lead to still a lot of unrest and burnout and ultimate, like, I think, physical ailments, disease, all that.
Yeah. So let's just talk for 1 second about burnout. I mean, I'm a physician. I do emergency general surgery. I have my practice is based on emergency general surgery. So we don't get good sleep, that sort of thing. So let's just go back and talk about what do you see as, you know, what do you see as burnout? What can we just put a definition to that?
Sure. For, you know, it's a good question. I think burnout, when I see it in my nursing colleagues, it's always been, you know, they have lost that zest for coming to work. They've lost their zest for life. They want to find a way out, away from patient care. They don't want to do what really brought them joy and brought them into the field, you know, once before. They're like looking for the best and quickest way out, right? They're certainly not getting rest. Some of that contributes to their night shift work versus, you know, crazy shifts, that all of that. But, you know, they're missing time with their families because they're not finding fulfillment. They're just, I'm finding the ones that come to me for certainly one-on-one coaching clients have just kind of lost their happy. That's what they describe. They've lost their happy. They're overworked and stressed out and don't know that they even want to do healthcare or nursing anymore.
Right.
I
mean, I think we've got a couple of things to talk about here. You know, you say they're overworked and stressed out. Mm-hmm. And I recently watched a video by ZDog. If you know, anybody who's in healthcare in America knows who ZDog is. He's an ER physician, and he's got a Facebook page, and he puts out videos. And he talks about the fact that we're not really suffering from burnout; we're suffering from moral compromise, essentially. When you know, a good portion of my audience is in other countries. So for those of you who live in a country that has elevated healthcare, this is really not as relevant to you, because I like to say that America is the land of the corporation and the home of the profit. It's not really the land of the free and the home of the brave anymore. And medicine is no exception. And as a physician in the system, I've had my share of burnout. I quit my job in 2010 and I just actually left one day. I called up the vice president and I said, I'm not coming back. I was bawling. I was just like completely, you know, and I had an existential crisis because, you know, I had gone into medicine and I wanted to help people. And then I got into it and I found out that, you know, nobody wanted me to succeed. There was all this competition and you know, the person who was supposed to mentor me said, you're never going to make a living here. And it was like, what? You know, after a couple years of that pressure, I was like, I can't, this is not for me. So we have a moral problem in healthcare in America, right? Mm-hmm. And the point I was trying to make when I, you know, got into that convoluted story about the land of the corporation and the home of the profit is that because of business taking over medicine and insurance companies being for profit instead of nonprofit, we now as humans have become cogs in a machine, where before, when we started our healthcare model, we weren't. And so I think that really contributes because we've lost our humanity, right? And I'm sure you can attest to that as a nurse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we've seen it, you know, even from the 19 years I've been at this hospital, I've seen a huge change in how, you know, just the hospital I've been at has run, has functioned, how nurses operate, how administrators operate, to where it is today. And I agree, it's a big corporation feel, much different than the small hospital. Even though we were a very good sized children's hospital, very different feel.
Yeah. And you know, on top of that, then you have the burden of the academic, especially in a pediatric hospital, the academic pressure to make sure that everything is evidence-based.
Yeah.
And so that makes it even harder. And I've always said, ever since I was a patient, you know, with my son in the hospital, you know, I've always said that, it's not the doctors that run the hospital. The doctors think they run the hospital, you know, but it's the nurses, because the nurses are there. They're always there. They're the ones cleaning up the shit. They're the ones, you know, helping, you know, get people up and making sure that they're, you know, doing what they're supposed to do. And so without our nurse colleagues, you know, we can't do anything. And I'll tell you, I was bailed out so many times as an intern and a resident because the nurse said, that's not what you want to do. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so
been there, done that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's vitally important that the role that nurses play. I mean, I think as men have entered nursing, it's become mm-hmm. more respected, unfortunately, but we do live in a patriarchy. So, you know, we're seeing more and more respect of the nursing field, but let's get back to resiliency. Right. So in your entrepreneurial business, you teach resiliency. So can you tell me a little bit about how you teach it?
Yeah. So again, you know, still working on that model, but I do one-on-one client coaching for mostly nurses right now. I have some parents that I've been working with in a different kind of concept, mm-hmm. but mostly with the nurses one-on-one looking at, you know, just how they can be more resilient in their life. And then we do kind of really a deeper dive into each specific issue maybe that's coming up really. What I do more for my coaching clients as a group coaching program, I, you know, have started to build a resiliency framework to kind of look at how all the pieces that really fit into resiliency.
Let's talk for a second about resiliency. Let's define it. Mm-hmm. What would you define resilience as?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, resiliency to me is really kind of looking at how we can bounce back from really challenging, traumatic experiences. And not just, you know, bounce back and I'm okay now, but really to how we can thrive beyond that circumstance.
Right. Thrive. Yeah. Thrive. I love that. Thrive beyond the circumstance. So are you working on, just question, are you working on identity? Are you helping them with, you know, who they're being in that space?
You know, with my one-on-one clients, we have looked at some of that. I think, you know, what I find from, you know, the pressures, like we were talking about in healthcare and corporations, and I think nurses tend to do this a little bit to themselves as well, is the pressure they put on themselves to succeed and to be more, right? So I've had clients come in and they're really stuck with that sort of title, you know, that they've either, you know, gone on to get further degrees. They now have a title that makes them something, that gives them an identity in the hospital or in the system, but they're really looking, you know, how can I do something else? How can I be part, you know, work part-time, be there for my family, do something else, but I would lose this identity, right? I don't have this title anymore if I do that, and what does that say about me? So definitely have had that come up for a few of my clients, and we've had to work through that identity piece.
Yeah, identity is a huge piece. I think it's huge in every market. Actually, I think if you're helping people discover themselves, identity I think is a big part of it. So bouncing back from trauma, I love that, and thrive beyond circumstance. So in terms of working with parents like me, right? How what do you do for them?
So in my group coaching, and when I was certainly at the bedside, I guess, you know, that's where it kind of all started, right? So I was, you know, an educator for the nurses, but I always took my education, you know, we always had to be educators for parents first. You know, I had physicians even that had their kids diagnosed, and they're, you know, I would be essentially nervous first, you know, training them, and you know, but they were all lovely, and they're like, you know what, I'm not an oncology physician, so just give it to me and teach me what I need to know, and then I could, you know, give it straight to them. You know, I think parents, like you were saying, you know, there's so much fear especially when you don't know the system, you don't know the terminology, you don't know the words. It is very frightening. You're not sure what's going on, but to have somebody at least explain, and that's what I always felt like my role was to explain that that terminology. So, you know, the physicians would come in and give, you know, this whole spiel of what they're going to do, what needs to happen, what tests are going to be performed, what scans need to be done. And they'd walk out and it's almost like gibberish to the families. They're just like, I have no idea what that all meant necessarily. You know, and so, you know, I was, you know, felt like my role was to help reinforce a lot of that and share with them, you know, this is what they're talking about. This is how, you know, it's going to go down. And I always had parents really be very appreciative of that because it helped to kind of not necessarily dumb it down, but just to really bring it to, I guess, their level, wherever that was for them, and help them really understand, you know, that things are going to be okay. It can be scary for sure along the way, but how can we do that? To your point also, when you're saying, you know, sometimes you're that parent, and I've, you know, there's different types of parents. You know, parents can be so questioning, and I think that's another thing I felt like I was pretty good at was, you know, handling all sorts of types of parents, because again, I think it was communication. There were some, you know, nurses that were very standoffish and they're like, oh my gosh, they ask questions like over and over and, you know, infinitum. And I'm like, it's because they're scared, you know, they just don't know and they want those answers. And so, you know, I was just always trying to be that, you know, reinforcer, that educator, trying to sit with them, knowing that, you know, they're just asking a lot of those questions because they're really frightened and they're not really understanding of what's happening.
Yeah. And you know, to remember back when my son was in the hospital, we were at Loma Linda, which is not too far from where we are right now. And the first time the attending rounded and he came in with 1,000 people and I was so intimidated, like, why are there 1,000 people in my son's room? And, you know, getting the nurses to explain to me, well, you know, this is how they teach. And, you know, but if it weren't for a nurse, I mean, my son was so, so sick and we were in the step down unit and I was very defensive. And, you know, nurse came up to me and said, listen, you better be nice.
Because if you're not nice. Sometimes they're having real talk.
Yeah. If you're not nice, you know. So I want to tie this back to menopause because, as you know, this is the Menopause Movement podcast and we're talking about resiliency. And you're not in menopause yet, right?
Not quite.
No. Have you had any symptoms of menopause at all?
You know, no, I've had nothing that I can define, but I've had some pretty wacky hormonal stuff over the years. Sure. So nothing's, you know, that I can see has started as of yet.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to bring you on is because menopause is such a huge time of change for us. And what happens to the woman, you know, as we lose our estrogen, is it can affect our brains to the point that we can either not remember things, okay, we can get brain fog, we can feel like we're having dementia, or we can feel like we're not ourselves. And that's a big part of what I do is I help people find themselves again. And so how do you think that resiliency would play a role in menopause?
Yeah, you know, as we were talking about the definition before, with resiliency is something that you're bouncing back from a circumstance, you know, it could be anything. I say a trauma sometimes for the people that I work with, but any circumstance. So, menopause could be one of those circumstances where, like you said, I think, you know, there's a lot of women and friends I've had that certainly, you know, that affects a lot of their life, right? It is a big change. And so sometimes, you know, you find yourself, you know, in depression, anxiety, like all these things come up during that time. And so how can resiliency play into that maybe? And how can we go back to, like I was saying, the definition, not only just like, okay, I've dealt with menopause, but, you know, how can I actually thrive and be even, you know, happier and more fulfilled and living my best life even through and beyond menopause, right?
Yeah. So I like to teach there's something I teach in the course, which is it's really kind of a resiliency tool. And when something happens, it's just a thing, right? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Yeah, who knows?
Right.
But it's a thing,
right?
And the sooner that we can look at that thing and say, you know, this is a thing and here's the lesson, the sooner we can remove all the meaning and attachment from it. And I think resiliency has a lot to do with letting go of outcomes. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I know that in my own life, as I've grown in my understanding of how the brain works and understanding menopause and whatever, as I've learned on that, I've been able to say, okay, you know, I want this thing, but maybe getting that thing isn't as important, you know, maybe the better thing is to look here. And, you know, I know a little bit about resilience, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, I suffered a surgical residency. We can just that's enough.
Right. Seriously. Yes. You know? Anyone going through nursing school, I would say, can get through resilient too.
Yeah,
I
mean, sure.
Those are tough fields. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that I think resiliency that can help resiliency is the whole idea of gratification. Mm-hmm. And while we're outcome focused, we still have to do the work, you know, and it's just like long-term work. Mm-hmm. But what do you think is can you give us a tip that we can, you know, leave the listeners with that would kind of help them become a little bit more resilient today?
Well, one of my biggest things I know it's always a challenge for everybody, but I believe rest and sleep is probably one of the biggest things that can make us more resilient. It is really hard to become our best selves and to bounce back and thrive when we are sleep deprived and, you know, just our brains are not getting the rest that they need. We tend to get overwhelmed. We tend to have, you know, a lot of anxiety built up with lots of things going on, and you're not sleeping on top of that, right? So I think rest, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, great if we could get more sleep in the night. That's not always possible for certain moms or if you're doing shift work and those kind of things. What are some other ways we can get rest? You know, you can get rest, perhaps even just, you know, taking some time in the day to do some, you know, breathing exercises or breath work or meditation, you know, just taking a 10-minute mental break, and whether you nap or not, but just taking that mental break. I think just finding ways that we can rest our brains, rest our bodies, can be super beneficial to our overall resiliency and stress levels.
That's great. I think that's really, really great advice. And the best thing, I mean, you know, when we talk about rest and sleep, you know, for the menopausal woman, there's a lot of sleep disruption. You know, with mm-hmm. the loss of estrogen, what happens is we get disrupted sleep. But sometimes there's a couple things that'll happen. And so this is what you have to look forward to. you have the laying down in the bed and your mind not shutting off.
Yeah.
Okay. And that happens to people before menopause, but it can get worse during menopause. And then you have the laying down in the bed and going to sleep and feeling great. And then like 4 hours later, waking up in a puddle of sweat and being so hot and then freezing. Yeah. And so I'm sure my members are going to laugh, and, you know, the listeners are going to laugh and relate, because, you know, these are things that happen. But one of the things that I think is really important that we tend to overlook is that, yeah, we may have disrupted sleep, but what are we doing to kind of combat that in terms of mindfulness and restfulness during the day? And like you said, meditation, I'm a big proponent of meditation. I meditate at least once a day. And I find that no matter how much sleep I get, I'm able to find a way to bring in more energy when I meditate. And I can't imagine meditation. It must be one of the tools you teach in you know, resiliency. Meditation's pretty much saved my life.
Yeah, you know, I think there's, you know, sometimes just even tools to kind of get our minds like outside of, you know, that kind of squirrel mode where you're just like trying to think of all those things. One of the tools, you know, I was taught and that I've, you know, used and it's been really helpful lately in the last several months, is just actually, it sounds kind of silly, but like doodling. And so some people are natural doodlers. Some people are not. But, you know, just learning how to just kind of take your mind kind of to a quiet space. It's kind of like a meditative sort of activity, but, you know, using that pen to paper or pencil to paper and really just finding a way to not have anything that you're particularly thinking about, that you're just drawing lines, shapes. There's lots of different YouTube videos about it. I think it's called zoodling, and, you know, you can do lots of different ways to, you know, it becomes creative as one thing. And even if you're not creative, it doesn't even matter because it's just lines on a piece of paper that can be scribbled however. But it really just helps to calm that mind down and sort of just get you into a different state of mind. Not totally meditation, but it just, you know, gets that mind of chatter sort of stopping for a little bit.
That's really, really cool. And, you know, I learned, I went to a conference a few years ago, and I learned a technique to try and pull out some more creative sorts of things from yourself, right? And you ask yourself a series of questions, and you write the answers with your right hand, and then you put your pen in your left hand, and you write it with your left hand. Or you know, whichever is your dominant hand. You start with your dominant hand, and then you move to your and it's amazing what comes out. It's a way to just kind of get connected with your whole brain.
Oh, absolutely. And I think even doing that doodling exercise, sometimes it really leads into journaling. It can lead into, you know, people go into meditation, you know. However, because it just slows that all that chatter and lets other things kind of come in to let you be more creative, to really think clear. So I've loved that tool.
That's really a great tip. You know, just kind of getting a little bit creative with your hands. Even, you know, if you were to get some crayons and draw a mandala or, you know, anything like that, I think is in any time there's a creative outlet. You know, I did a mosaic. I went to a mosaic class at the Omega Institute. My wife really wanted to do this thing. And so I'm like, okay, I'll go. And it's actually the backdrop in my home. It's the backdrop of my studio. When I do my videos and it's like, it was a heart, you know, it was like a heart centered type of thing. And it's a heart mirror. And then, you know, there's all these little pieces that I put along it. And, you know, I really feel connected when I look at it and it's right there. And so creative outlets can really help us. And the other thing that I think is really important, especially for those of us who have had trauma, and if you've lived long enough, you have trauma. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Everybody does, and it's just
a different, you know, varying degrees, but, you know, we've all been hurt by our mom or a dad. You know, we've all had that person, you know, say something that hurt us. And so we have trauma, and we've all had trauma, and becoming resilient to that trauma, and not having it be the focus. This is what I was going with. So becoming resilient to that trauma and not having it be the focus of our lives is so freeing. And so learning how to, you know, deal with that inner voice. I call her the bitch inside my head who tells me I suck.
Yeah, we all have a name for it, right?
Yeah, we do.
I agree. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I have a website. It's kellywestonline.com.
K-E-L-L-Y-W-E-S-T.
Yep.
Online.com.
Cool. And then I'm on Instagram. Instagram is Kelly West Online.
Instagram.
And same thing for Facebook. Yeah.
Kelly West Online. That's awesome. All right. Any other tips or tricks or any other thing you'd like to say to the audience before you go?
No, I would just, you know, appreciate so much you giving me the time to be on your podcast and to talk to your listeners. It's a great opportunity. And I just hope that I can, you know, inspire, you know, others and certainly women of our age and beyond, you know, that are going through menopause, to just look at how we can become more resilient and not just live out the rest of our days, certainly, you know, just, you know, as life as it is, but to really thrive, be resilient, love their life to the very end. Because I really believe that's possible for all of us.
Live our lives on purpose.
That's right.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Kelly, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, and, thanks so much.
You know, I'm sure we're going to have you back.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
All right.